Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see. Give me your eyes, Lord. Give me your eyes so I can see for everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your heart for the brokenhearted.
Hi, welcome to Life Matters. This is your host, Mariah Wilding. I'm so happy to be with you tonight. I hope you had an incredible day. I did. You know, I was thinking about what I could share with you. And, you know, I'm going to take you back to the beginning when I was born. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to go fast forward a few years. But even as a young girl, my parents, my dad went to Melody Land School of Theology. And I remember them having an open door policy. I remember a single mom who was escaping a domestic violence situation living with us with her little girl. And then my mom babysat some neighbors of ours as a little girl and her foster sister. And that really was my introduction into foster care. And I must have been about 5 at the time. And, oh, I love this little girl. Her name was Sherry. And I just said, Mom and Dad, can't we adopt her? And, you know, they were very seriously considering it. They were looking into the paperwork and what it took. And they also loved her very much. She was a really beautiful little biracial girl. And this was in California. And yet we were in the process of moving to Texas. And my mom and dad's family are from Texas, so they're moving back to be with family. And it just didn't work. Now, it is hard to adopt children and take them across state lines during that adoption process. And, of course, I was young at the time, so I don't know all the particulars. All I know is that I was very disappointed, and she was not able to move with us. And then, you know, a few more years go by, and my mom had a few more babies. And so at that point, I was about 5 and a half when my first sister was born. I was so very excited. And then 3 years later, we had another sister. And then about 18 months later, another sister. And when I was a young teenager and I had 3 little girls all into my stuff, I remember like making jokes and say, I just prayed for one sister and God gave me 3. And then when I was about 15, my little brother was born. But in between the girls and my brother, when I was about 13, 14, I went to my parents and I said to them, do you know that there are children that don't have homes? And they said, well, yes. I said, well, what are we going to do about it? And it's so weird because it feels like the other day. I remember we were in their room. I don't know what they were doing, reading. It was nighttime. They were sitting on their bed. And I just went to them with something very serious, very heavy on my heart. See, my dad was in law school at the time, at UT Law School. My brother wasn't born yet, so they had 4 children, 3 younger children. I think my youngest sister was probably 3 or so at the time. And so you would think, that's not really a good time, Mariah. I mean, law school, do you know how demanding that is? My dad also had an internship, a part-time job to help support his family. My mom was doing some after-school daycare in the neighborhood. We lived in Travis Country in the Austin area. And is that really an ideal time? But see, when is it an ideal time? We really can't look for people who have all this extra time and just don't know what to do with it. So I guess I'll just be a foster or adoptive parent. The truth is that most of our families are busy. But see, the children that we can bring to you, they're so worth it. So it doesn't really matter what you have going on if you have the capacity to love these children and take care of them and make them a priority. And so my parents prayed and they said, God, is this really what you have for us to do in this season of our life, like right now? Of course, I was saying, well, yeah, hello, it just makes sense. And apparently God said yes too, because then my parents became foster parents. So I went on a Mexico trip, went on a missions trip to Mexico. And this was back way back when, before cell phones. And I remember I got home so excited to be home, had gotten sick, you know, got some bug on the trip, but got to love on some children, got to minister to some people, but I was really happy to be home. Opened the door, and what did I see? This little toddler. I couldn't really tell. Apparently he had just gotten there. I couldn't tell if it was a boy or girl. There were no clothes on this little guy except for a diaper and long hair. And right now that's kind of in fashion for little boys, maybe for some people, but then it was definitely not. And so I said, oh my gosh, what's going on? And my mom's like, this is our little foster boy, little foster baby. I was so excited. I'm like, well, what's the story? Who is he? And I'm cuddling him and holding him and putting my bags in the house. And it turns out this little boy was given a girl's name. He was dressed in girl's clothes. That was when his mom was paying attention to him. But much of the time, he was left in his bed. He was in his bed without anybody caring for him, attending to him. So he was very developmentally delayed. And, you know, when you're developmentally delayed, what that means is that he wasn't walking, even though he was almost two. He wasn't talking. He just kind of had sort of a blank look. And it was really unknown as to what his capabilities were. Like, this is just how he is, or is this due to his environment? Can he change? But, you know, I just remember a little boy that was so beautiful with his big blue eyes. And I immediately bonded with him. And I'm sure my parents did too. I'm just sharing from my own personal experience. And I kind of forgot, you know, that's been many years from now, but several years ago, my mom was sharing the story about their first little foster child. And she said this, she said, Mariah made this little boy her mission to help, to love. And she began to work with him and say, Mama, Dada, Mariah. I don't know if you ever got the Mariah part. And then it kind of all came back to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember that. I remember trying to help him learn how to walk and saying, come, come. And his first step, my whole family were all clapping, yay. And we just poured into him the love that he did not get for so long. And so there came a time when he'd been with us for several months, and my mom told me, Mariah, the agency, this is the agency that placed him with us, the agency said we need to take him to the doctor, and they're going to do some tests and some evaluations, and they're going to see how this little boy is, and if he, and at that time, they used this word, if he is retarded or not. Now, I know that is not a politically correct word now, but I'm just telling you that's what happened then. And so we got babysitters for my sisters. And so I went with my mom and I was so proud. I wanted to show this doctor, oh, this little boy is so smart. Look what all he can do. And so we showed him, look how he's walking. Look at the words he's saying. And then he was playing with blocks and all the other different things that this doctor had him do. And you know what this doctor said? He said, this boy, this little toddler is not retarded. In fact, he is so intelligent, so smart to have come from where he was to where he is now. Isn't that amazing? So even as a teenager, I was able to impact this little boy's life. My parents took time. They took time, even though they recognized that their time was valuable. This was a very busy season. It didn't matter. Yes, they could have been foster parents in 5 years, but how does that help the child who needs a home today? And so they decided to take time out to choose to love this little boy, to minister to him, to help him grow. And it was so incredible to be there with this doctor, to hear the words. And of course, I knew it because I was taking ownership of him. I'm like, well, yes, he is. He is so smart. He is so precious. He is so beautiful. So this little baby boy, toddler, was adopted by a family who could not have children. Of course, I wanted our family to adopt him, but he was adopted by an infertile couple. And he was just, you know, the light of their lives, their dream come true. And I never got to see him again after he left. But I imagine that he is a strapping young man with his incredible blue eyes who is changing the world. And I know that he was grown up to be so loved and so valued. And so let me think. I'll give you my age. He must be about 22 right now. Isn't that amazing? And so when we come back from a break, I'm going to tell you what happened after that. You're listening to Life Matters. Check us out at familylinkkids.com. Friend me on Facebook, Mariah Wilde Family Link. And don't forget, for updates, I put them on Facebook. We put them on our website, Family Link. Do not forget about Caleb's Run right now, this Saturday. We are gearing up. I cannot wait. I'll be there early in the morning. I'll get to share with everybody. I'm excited to be there. Some of our families are running or walking. But, you know, every bit that you give, that you donate to Family Link, helps children. If you run in Caleb's Run, you will be helping Family Link help more children. We're honored that Shoreline Church has chosen Family Link as their charity for this number one fundraiser honoring Caleb Koch's life. So go to our website, register to run, walk, or support us by being a sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Give me your eyes for just 1 second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones fighting. Give me your eyes so I can see.
To Life Matters. This is your host, Mariah Wilde, and I'm so happy to be with you. I am sharing with you some of my life story. How the heck did we end up where we are today? It's been an incredible journey. So there I was as a young girl, wishing, hoping, praying my mom and dad would adopt this little girl we were babysitting, who was a foster girl, and working out. And I was about 5 or 6 at the time. We didn't work out because we moved to from California to Texas. And then, you know, things got busy. I had a few sisters. I was going to say brothers and sisters, but my brother didn't come till later. I had 3 sisters after that. And went to my parents at the age of 14 and said, "Do you know children that don't have homes?" And they said, "Well, yes." And I said, "Well, what about it?" Fast forward, we just shared with you about our first little wonderful foster boy. And then after that, we got a series of newborns. And I remember this one little one was premature, and he was going to have to be fed every 2 hours. And my mom said, "Oh, Mariah, I don't know if I can do it. You know, I got so much going on with your sisters. Your dad's in law school. I don't know if I can wake up every 2 hours to feed this little one." And I said, "Yes, you can do it, because I will help you." And you know what? Teenagers don't really need that much sleep, do they? And so I took several shifts during the night. And I remember just sitting there rocking this little tiny baby, giving him his bottle, Levanon, and burping him at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. And even then I knew, this is such a privilege. What a privilege it is to love this little baby. And every time they would leave, in this case, it was a little bit different because we were fostering for a private adoption agency. And for some reason at the time, they could not go straight into their adoptive home. So we knew they were going to leave, and they did not stay for that long. And so maybe a month maximum, but it doesn't matter. A couple of weeks, a month with a newborn or a toddler, you just bond like that. And so my sisters and I would just cry when the little baby would leave. And I don't remember. I imagine my mom did too, because she's very soft-hearted, but I don't remember that part. And she would say, "You know what, if it's too hard, we don't have to do it again." And then we're all like crying, "Yes, we want to do it again." And so they're like, "Okay, my mom and dad." And so even then, as a teenager, I knew that these children were important. I knew that they're worth my time. I knew they were worth everything. So another little girl that really touched my heart, she came to our house about 3, and her story was, and she had all these cute clothes. She didn't look neglected at all. But the story was that her mom just decided that she wanted to place her for adoption and that she couldn't raise her for whatever reason. And so I thought it was kind of crazy, but this little girl totally attached to me and called me mom. So there's a little African-American little girl, and I was still, you know how you measure things when you're young. And I was still driving. I'm sorry, I wasn't driving yet. And so that means I was under 16. And so I must have been about 15. And so this little girl, 3, 3 and a half, when we would go places, like I would take her to the park in the neighborhood, things like that. Maybe take her, or like myself, somewhere that we could just walk. And she would say, "Mommy, mommy." And then when I'd go to school, she would cry and go, "Mommy." And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, that was so weird." It was good preparation though. I thought, I know I don't look like her mom. How come she thinks I'm her mom and not my mom? Like, my mom is just the best, sweetest, kindest, wonderful mom she is now and she was then. So I'm like, why doesn't she think she's the mom? But she didn't. She decided I was the mom. And so I'll never forget, I got a call at school, and that was before cell phones again. I don't know how we did it. And I got a call, so I went down, you know, to the secretary's office, I guess. And my mom said, Tyresha's going to be leaving today. Her mom decided not to place her for adoption, and she really misses her. And so she's actually going to be able to get her back, and her family is going to be more supportive now. And she said, I wanted to bring her to school if you want me to bring her to tell you goodbye. And so I remember my mom driving up in the minivan, and I remember this beautiful little girl, and she wasn't even with us that long. I mean, bonding can happen really quickly. You can only imagine with some of these foster children who stay for a year. I don't remember how long. It was a month, couple of months. You know, this was a long time ago, but I remember probably a couple of months, I'm guessing. And so I remember just seeing this little girl and telling her goodbye, and I knew I would never see her again. Here she was, like, crying for me, and be so excited when I come home from school and everything, my own little cheering squad. And I knew I would never see her again. And I just remember crying and hugging her. And so, see, now even today, people say things like, but Mariah, I don't know how you do it or why you do it. I just could never do it. I would get too attached. Or it would be too hard for my kids. It is hard, but here's the thing. We have to think of the children first. It wasn't about me. Oh, poor me. I miss her. I'm sad. I can't do this anymore. It was about her. Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. This is going to be a hard transition back for her. And I was sad for myself and the fact that I would miss her, but I would never even dream of saying I shouldn't have done it, or, man, why did my parents have to be foster parents? I knew that she needed us for a season. This little girl needed to go somewhere. And I knew that if it wasn't my home, even then I knew there's mean foster parents out there. There's mean adoptive parents. There's mean people in general. I don't even know if I realized it at the time, but there's also pedophiles. There are people that we have to try to screen out that might want to be a foster parent for really bad reasons. Maybe they want slave labor. Maybe they want, you know, to do terrible things. And so the thing is that it's not about me and it's not about you. It's about these children that need us. And so, yes, I'm telling you, I would, even as a teenager, we're in my little sisters, we're all crying. Ah. But we never said, don't do it anymore. And we can't handle it. And it's too hard. We allowed ourselves to attach. We allowed ourselves to bond. We allowed ourselves to love. But then we had to let go when we had to let go. And then we had to prepare our hearts and be ready to love the next one. And so those are the ones that really stand out in my mind. We had some other beautiful babies that we fostered. But those are the ones that really stand out in my mind when I was a teenager. And then I got married young, had Sierra young, and I'm happy to say I'm still married now. Let's see how long, 20 years. Isn't that amazing? Time flies. Time flies when you're busy and when you're changing the world. And so I couldn't wait, though, to be a foster parent myself. Of course, I wanted to be an adoptive parent, but my first thing in my mind was fostering, just because you're in the middle of that emergency, that there are children that need you right now. And so the great thing is that, of course, I talked to Chris about that before we got married. Well, you know, this is really important to me. My parents are foster parents. I want to foster. I want to adopt. I want my home to be open to children that need us. And he had an experience. His parents weren't foster parents, but his mom is a nurse, and they lived in the Philippines for a while. And his mom took him to work and to help with some orphanages. And so his heart was touched at a young age as well, and as a teenager. And he recognized, and working and living in a third world country, not because of the military, but because of his dad's job, he recognized that, wow, he also found out early on that this world wasn't all about him, that there are others who are less fortunate, but they're so important. And so he was on board. And so he waited till I was 21, because you have to be 21 to be a licensed foster parent in the state of Texas. And the funny thing is, it's still the same now. And he was a few years older. I think he was 24. And so we went through the training. I did everything. I did lots of research. I'm like, okay, we got it. Found somebody who didn't discriminate against my age. And said, look, I'm already a realtor. I became a realtor at the age of 18. I'd already won some awards as a young realtor. Successful, owned a home. even though I was 21, we'd been busy. My mom was like, oh my gosh, Mariah, when you're like 12, you're like 22. And so I'm like, we have a stable home. We're married. We own a home. We have good credit. What does it take to be a foster parent? We have lots of love, and I have experience with fostering within my family. So the first call that we got, we were licensed, we're excited. We got a call and they said, we have a 10-year-old girl. She has enuresis and caprices, ODD, and lots of other things. I had no idea what that meant. And you know what? Not only was it before the cell phones, it was before the internet. I mean, I think only a couple of years before the internet, but still. So it's not like I could Google it like I would right now and just go, what does that mean? It might ask, but also just, you know, you can find out just about anything on the internet. It's like having the library at your fingertips. And so I just had no idea what that meant. They didn't tell me. All I heard was there's a 10-year-old girl that needs a home. The other thing that they said was that she'd been moved like 10 different times. She'd been separated from her siblings. They were adopted, but she wasn't. And all I heard was somebody needs a home. She needs you. I said, okay, sounds great. And then I remembered, oh, I think I need to call Chris. He said, okay. And I don't remember. I told him all those big words. I think I might have just pared it down to a 10-year-old girl. But you know what? She was also specialized. Back then, we had basic, moderate, and specialized children. The next step up, I don't remember the term for it, but they needed to go into a psychiatric hospital or an institution. And so I look back, I'm like, what the heck was this agency thinking? Like, we wouldn't even start a mature family their first time fostering with what is now considered a level four, a really, specialized. I just mixed it up. Back then, it was level one, two, three, and four. When at the highest level four is it's the most challenging child you can even keep in a home setting. Now it's basic, moderate, specialized. Sorry. And so we would not start a brand new foster family with a specialized child unless there were very extenuating circumstances, a really strong reason why we should. Certainly not a 21-year-old with young children. And so anyways, I have to say that it was very challenging. I had heard about the honeymoon phase, but I had no idea what that really meant. And so I do remember giving them a report about a week or so into her being with us. And I said, and her name was Brenda. And I said, oh my gosh, she's wonderful. She does everything we ask her to. She's so great, this and that. And I thought at the time that she's not pretending. I thought the honeymoon was like where they don't show you their real self or their behaviors. And so they're compliant to everything you ask, but then it comes out later. But you know what I found out since then? That's not what it means. They're not pretending. They're just in total shock. Think about this. They've been moved. This child or children have been moved from one family to the next. They have no idea. They're in serious grief. Either they're grieving the previous foster family, you know, the attachment that they made, their school, or maybe they're just getting removed, which is more common, just getting removed from their biological family. And so then we think sometimes, oh, well, we've just rescued them from an abusive situation. They should be happy. But think about it. This is all they know. And so maybe their dog they sleep with every single night, like my daughter does with our dog, and who tries to sleep in my bed, but I don't allow him to. And so, but she's attached to him every night. She's like, come on, Mackie, let's go. In the morning, she takes him out. She and the other kids are super excited. He's really excited to see them when we get home from somewhere. And so maybe it's a dog or a cat. Maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe it's a teacher. But I guarantee you there is someone or something that they're truly grieving. So these children are in serious, deep grief and loss. They're also shocked because usually they don't have time to prepare. A policeman or a CPS doesn't come and say, in 1 week, we're going to be taking you from your family because of this and this. So tell everybody goodbye, do all this stuff, have a goodbye party. Make sure you get to go tell your friends and neighbors and your teacher. No, normally, because it's an emergency, their lives are in immediate danger. That's why they're being removed. Normally, it's that day, right then. Here I am, right here. And if it's after school, they don't even get to say goodbye to their teacher or their friends. They usually don't get to take most of their clothes and most of their stuff. And because technically it's really property of their parents. And they don't get to say goodbye to neighbors. There's not a big goodbye party. So they show up at our house and they're totally shocked. That is why you oftentimes have what's called a honeymoon period. They're in too much shock to tell you no. So when you say clean your room, they're like, okay, this is what we do. Whatever you're telling them, they're just like, Okay. But then later on, you know, their personality comes through and who they are, and they begin to maybe feel some of the pain. They're going through the stages of grief, and that's okay. So we're going to talk about what that might look like through the story of Brenda and some of our other children when we come back from a break. Y'all are listening to Life Matters. Check us out at FamilyLinkKids.com. That's a great place to donate online. Every single bit makes a difference. Friend me on Facebook, Mariah Wilde Family Link, for updates, and we'll be right back.
Give me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
Well, welcome back to Life Matters. This is your host, Mariah Wilde, and I'm so happy to be with you. And you know what? Today, I am sharing with you my story, and I love having some of our foster families on and some of our staff and sharing their stories of helping and becoming foster and adoptive parents. However, today is my turn, and I can already tell it's definitely going to be like a 2 or 3 part series. And so, because I'm just at the age of being 21, and I have to tell you, that was more than a couple of years ago. So there I was at the age of 21, a foster parent. My husband was about 24, and we had this girl that Brenda. And it was funny that people would go, this is really weird. Y'all kind of look alike, because I had long brunette hair. She had long brunette hair. We were both Caucasian, you know, kind of look similar. And so, but I was only 10-ish years older. So when we would go into the grocery store, she would say, Mom, can I have, you know, can we get this cereal or whatever? And people's heads would like spin like they were in The Exorcist. Not that I've seen the movie, but I've heard about it. And so I would just look at them like, what? This is so normal. I mean, that's what I was thinking. I look back and I can imagine a 21-year-old with a 10-year-old foster daughter and when in total, like, let's see, 3 children. I'm sure that is unusual. In fact, the fact that I now have a 19-year-old daughter, thinking of her doing this in like 2 years, I'm like, there's no way. So I guess it was unusual, but you know what? It was awesome. We were changing the world in our very own home, which is the whole idea of fostering and adopting. So it was totally awesome. But there did come a time when she went from being so compliant and so easy and so perfect and wonderful to really showing how she felt. And that's a part that sometimes foster parents get caught up on. Like, but she's doing this or he's doing that. And I'm just like, well, yeah, they're hurting. It would be weird if they were like this perfect, polite, easygoing child when they have been severely abused, neglected, perhaps bounced from house to house. And why on earth would they trust adults when adults have just hurt them? You have to earn these children's trust. You have to know that they're so hurting that your home is like a hospital. And sometimes I relate our foster children to children whose all their bones have been broken. If you had a child that's just all banged up and in a body cast and bruised and, you know, swollen, and you would just, your heart be like, oh my gosh. And you would be so gentle with them. And if they got upset or mad about something, you would say, oh, you would think, oh, I totally understand. They're just hurting. But see, that's how our foster children are. Maybe on the outside, they look normal. Maybe they're not cut and bruised and broken bones and all that stuff. But maybe they are. Sometimes they are. But I can guarantee you for sure that's what their inside looks like. Their inside is hurting. Their little heart is broken in a million pieces. They don't know where to turn, who to trust. They're grieving the loss of those that they've loved. They're grieving the loss of their innocence. They're scared. They're so afraid to bond and attach to your family. Because if they do, what might happen? If they bond with you and then begin to feel like safe and secure, then they're really afraid because they feel like chances are I'm going to leave again. And then it's going to hurt me even more. So they try to guard their heart and protect their heart. And so that's what we were going through with Brenda. All of a sudden, she became a little more obstinate. All of a sudden, we found out what enuresis and capresis is. Feel free to Google it, since you can. It's gross. It's gross. I was 21 going, oh my gosh, I don't want to have to deal with this. But see, I never thought about giving up. I never thought about saying, oh, this is just too hard. in the middle of it because I felt like she was worth it. And she was even the hardest foster child you could have. She, within Family Link, we placed 900 children, around 900 children in families in the past 5.5 years. She would qualify as one of our most challenging kids we've ever placed, even within Family Link. So I'm telling you, yeah, it was hard. I'm being honest. Yes, it was hard. But she was worth it. And we had some great times, too. I remember, you know, we went to Six Flags. It was her first time to go to a theme park. And she had a great time. In fact, she had a lot more fun on the roller coasters than I did because I don't do roller coasters hardly at all. In fact, I remember I tried to go on one with her, and I thought, that doesn't look too bad. I don't like the going down part. And I remember going up at the top, you know how you go up a little bit before you go down. And I remember begging the person who was standing there, like the helper. It was like a water log. I'm like, please, just let me off. And they're like, we can't. Can you believe that? Isn't that funny? And I'm not really afraid of anything. Like, I'll go into the ghetto. I'll talk to gang bangers. I don't care. I'll just get in there, get the kids, take them out, do whatever I need to do. And I'll tell you some stories about that later. But roller coaster? No. I'm like, no, I don't like it when it just goes down. I don't mind going up. So she thought that was pretty funny. And she had no problem with the roller coaster. And we had so many firsts, her first time to go to certain types of restaurants. It was so neat to be able to just invest in her and let her know, Brenda, you are worth it. Brenda, God has an incredible plan and purpose for your life. She really got into church. You know, that was so neat. Incredible things happen when you are willing to go from the ordinary to the extraordinary. That definitely was not ordinary, to become a foster parent and a parent at a young age. It wasn't normal, but it was wonderful. And it's something that I challenge you with. What today are you being confronted with that's not normal, but that would be wonderful? That would really change the world. That would really help somebody. And so that was Brenda. Brenda lived with us for a year. And then let me think. Oh, I remember, I'm trying to think who our next foster child was. Each one is so important and so precious, but we have had a few. And so I remember, though, how even then the need was impressed upon me. At a certain point, I had a 2-year-old and a 13-month-old, so just turning 1-year-old, and then I was pregnant with Benjamin, and I got a call for these two little children, and they'd been burned, and they were like 1 and 2, and of course I wanted to say yes, and so I told Chris, my husband. He was like, what? We already have two little ones, and we're having a baby, and I'm like, I know, but these kids need us. And he was like, there's no way, we can't do it. And I look back and I'm like, that, okay. He kind of had a point. And so he said, can't we just go a little older? And I'm like, okay. And I felt so bad. And I remember going, is there anybody I know? Anybody, anybody? But see, when you hear about the need, it's too late. You can't get licensed that day. And that's why you guys who want to do it, you need to get licensed now, not for the children today who need you, but the children who will need you in a few months. And so sometimes people go, but I want to know specifically about a certain child, and then I'll get licensed to foster or adopt. It's like, no, because the children we know about today need somebody today. So if you can't start the process today because of certain children, because then they won't be available by then. So anyways, I remember wanting to find a family whenever I had to say no, but then I couldn't because then all these people weren't licensed. So we did the next best thing, calling my family, calling friends and saying, oh, please, do you know this is this incredible need? You know that I'm a foster parent, and you know that I have, you know, 3 young children, yet I'm fostering and I'm making a huge difference. Will you do it with me? So I see, I was an advocate even then, not just for who I could bring in my home, but I was an advocate for these other children. And that's what I'm hoping that you will do with me. And so I remember then I began to have a complicated pregnancy, and I was having contractions early on, about 5 months, and I had to go on bed rest. This is with Benjamin, who's 15 now. And so people, even from church, would say things like, oh, I'm really sorry that's happening. So does that mean Brenda's going to have to leave? She's going to have to go into a different home? And I remember looking at them and I said, well, let me ask you a question. If you go on bed rest with your next baby, are your other kids going to have to leave and move homes? They're like, no. And I said, so I guess Brenda doesn't have to leave either because she's a part of our family. See, that's the kind of commitment that people seem to have a hard time wrapping their mind around. She's just a foster child. See, foster children have been given a bad rap. They've been treated like second-class citizens. They have already been abused and neglected. That is why they're in foster care. Is it too much to ask for them to be loved and valued as if they were your own children? They deserve it. They've already been abused and neglected. Now they're supposed to come in and be like Cinderella. Remember Cinderella and the stepsisters, and the stepmother just loved her own kids. But, oh, no, not you, Cinderella. Oh, you need to clean. You need to die. I know that's a fictional story, but that's how many foster children are treated. No, you can't go to this special, let's say, Schlitterbahn. We're going to get a, you're going to have to get a babysitter, stay with the Franks. I don't quite have enough money for you. Isn't that weird? But that is how people are treated. Or, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to have to, I'm having a new baby and I'm on bed rest and it's just going to be hard to take care of you. And so I'm sorry, but you're going to have to move. See, if you do that, you're just proving to them that you didn't really love them, that they're not really part of your family, and that they don't really matter. Or there's somebody sick in my family and I'm going to have to take care of them, so I can't take care of you too. And I'm sorry if you're a foster parent and somebody is sick in your family, but see, this child is your family while they need you. They have to be valued. Are you going to get rid of your own children? No. If something's going on in your life, no. I guess you just have to work it out, don't you? That's what we're looking for our kids, that commitment and that love. Because see, when they get that, that's when they can begin to trust, they can begin to relax, and they can begin to heal. And so I'm going to tell you about what happened next after Brenda was adopted. She was adopted by a family. She moved to California. And I was calculating the other day how old she is. I was thinking about that. Let me think real quick. If Ben is 15, she was 20. Wow, that is crazy. She's around 25. She might be a foster parent. I'd love to find her. We lost contact when her family who adopted her moved to California. And you remember I was 21, 22. So, and we didn't have the internet and all that stuff to help keep up email. And I lost contact with her, but I'd love to find her. So I thought I'm going to try to find her on Facebook. That would be so neat. Oh, isn't that amazing? 25. She's a grown up. She may even have kids. And yet she lived with us for a year that we were able to invest in her life and to love her. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Life Matters. Check us out at familylinkkids.com. For updates, friend me on Facebook, Mariah Wilde Family Link. And if you're listening going, you know what? I hope you're listening and thinking you're inspired to partner with Family Link and make a difference. But if you're feeling a little tired, worn out, not sleeping that great, maybe you're in pain or you have a family member that is, then I strongly encourage you to check out and use something that I use every day. In fact, my mom last night came over because she's in town right now, which is really exciting. And she said, oh, Mariah, I need another Pure Relief chip because she hasn't used one in a while. But she knows that they work. And she said, because my neck is really hurting. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. And then we put that on. I said, you know what? And she had already wearing the energy band. I said, let's go ahead and put an energy balancing chip on that opens up the meridians of your body as if you'd gone through like multiple sessions of acupuncture. And it allows your body to be at its optimal level along with the band. And she felt so good. She's like, oh, that feels great. And it's crazy because nothing is going into your body. It's a holographic disc or chip that you place on your body. It's clear, so it's not very like noticeable. But the crazy thing, it actually works. We work with real doctors, MDs, chiropractors, naturopaths who are using Ciara in their practice with unbelievable results. In fact, Dr. Vasquez, an MD from Florida, told me that, and I told many people because it was on a national conference call, international conference call, and he said, out of everything that I have access to in my medical bag, whether it be prescription medication, homeopathic, or herbal, whatever it is that I could give a client or a patient, nothing works like Ciara. That is the one thing I can pull out of my bag that I know I'm going to have almost instant results or, you know, very quick results compared to other options and zero side effects. He said, in my very own practice, I've had about 90 to 95% effectiveness with the Pure Relief holographic chip that helps relieve pain and discomfort. And then the sinus allergy, he was around 95%. And there's double-blind placebo studies that are very similar to those numbers. Isn't that amazing? So I'd love to share them with you. So check out familylink.ciara.com, familylink.ciaura.com. They're very affordable. And my philosophy is if you don't have your health, if you don't have energy to do the things that God's called you to do, what do you have? So we'll be right back.
me your eyes for just one second. Give me your eyes so I can see everything that I keep missing. Give me your love for humanity. Give me your arms for the brokenhearted, the ones that are far beyond my reach. Give me your heart for the ones forgotten. Give me your eyes so I can see.
Well, welcome back to Life Matters. This is your host, Mariah Wilde, and I'm so happy to be with you. So I'm sharing my personal story, my journey into foster care and adoption, started well before I founded Family Link. So there I was at 21, the foster mom of a 10-year-old girl. Kind of freaked people out when I was in the grocery store and other places. And she would call my name. The people were like, what? How is this even possible? I'm like, calm down. You can do it too. And so then Brenda ended up being adopted by an awesome family, moved to California. So that was a really great success story after living with us for about a year. And I remember we had three young children, about a one-year-old. Let's see, I have my first three are 21 months apart each. It's kind of funny. And so around a one-year-old, 2.5 to maybe turning three, and then 4.5-ish. And it was during that time that I was doing a respite for a family. And it was an older couple who were foster parents. And all these cute, cute little kids, their names at the time were Mandy and Timmy, because I changed them later. But Mandy was about three and Timmy was two. So when they were with us, which was a lot, they gave me five children under four. And boy, did we have a blast. The kids just played and played and played. Of course, they argued and, you know, fought a little bit, like sharing's always a big deal, isn't it, with little kids. But we had a great time, and oh, they were so precious. And unfortunately, Timmy was not potty trained, and even though I've had plenty of babies, I still think it's disgusting to change a toddler's diaper, and he was a big 2.5-year-old. So that was my sacrificing for Jesus part, but the rest of it, I had a great time. And I think it's funny now when I talk to him, like, the fact that I changed his diapers, I've known him a long time. But thank goodness Mandy was potty trained. So she was about 3.5. And so that she was a little older, so that must have been, she must have been in her fours. And we would just spend time with them, spend the weekends with them. Their foster parents were a little older, I think a little tired, so they utilized us a lot. And then I found out that these children were going to need a new foster home. Their parents, foster parents, were not in good health, and they were not going to be foster parents anymore. And so I thought, oh my gosh, you know, we need to find them an incredible foster family. And so I kind of looked around and I went to my parents and I said, oh, will you guys get relicensed really quick? In, you know, a short period of time, these children are going to need foster parents. And I love them so much, and I know you will too. I'll help you a lot. Here I was foster, you know, I was going to get other children, obviously, and older kids, probably. And so my parents said, okay. I was so excited. And so, of course, I had given my commitment. I'll support you. I'll help you, because they had five children at the time. And my dad had finished law school at that point, I think. And so he was now a young attorney. Well, he wasn't young, but he was a new attorney, I should say. And, you know, my mom was a homeschooler. And then remember when we were fostering, then she had a baby. And so my youngest brother was, let's see, he's a year older. So he must have been five. So her youngest was five, and then I was her oldest. And so they said, yes, Mariah, we will love these children. We will foster them. And yes, you can help us. And so, oh, they were so beautiful. I still have their pictures up in my house. And guess what? If you call my office and you hear this, Family Link, this is Casey. That is little Mandy. When she was adopted, she changed her name. So Casey was on the radio show recently, and she shared her story. And so, but that was when another set of children, and I must have been 22-ish. Probably about 22, when my mom and dad fostered Timmy and Mandy, and they lived with them for a year. And so it was kind of funny, because Timmy was going through a stage where he would place things in the toilet and flush them down. And what's really kind of funny is that I have Donovan, who is now two, right now in my own home, and he does the same stuff. Our master toilet wouldn't flush, and we're like, what is going on? So we called a plumber. And it's an older house. So we thought, oh, it's probably something wrong with the house. And he fished out of there somewhere deep inside a lady's razor. And since I know that I did not flush it down the toilet, neither do I think anybody else did, pretty sure that was Donovan. And so that brought back memories of Timmy. And so my parents who lived in the country and they had a septic system and it was such a mess. The plumber would come out and he'd have to fish out cars. He just had a fascination with it. And my parents would be like, oh my gosh, our house is, flooded over. And I'm like, sorry, but they're worth it though, aren't they? And I'm like, big smile. They're like, yes. So we were all like really happy when Timmy passed that stage and quit flushing things on the toilet. And then Mandy, we didn't talk about this when she came on, but on the radio show, but Mandy, even at the little age of 4, she would say things like, I just want to die. And when she would get in trouble, like did something wrong or something, and my mom would like maybe want to put her in timeout, because isn't that normally what you do, right, with a 4-year-old? She would just go, she'd have meltdowns, and she would just say, I want to die, and scream. And my mom, that was when she realized, you know what? You don't need to focus on discipline. You need to focus on totally on love. And she did quit putting her in timeout. She just held her, rocked her, loved her, sang to her, and just spoke words of love and encouragement. And she would say, oh, Mandy, God has an incredible plan for you. Oh, Mandy, you are loved. You are safe. You are a treasure. And over time, Mandy quit wishing that she would die. And I'm like, how would she even, she's 4. Like, she didn't even know exactly what she was saying. Even as adults, isn't it hard to understand death? It's like, what? But as a child, you can't understand it. But, she had a little sister who was murdered. She was missing her little sister. She was separated from some older brothers that had already happened before my parents took them in. And it happened right when they were first placed in emergency foster care. And so my mom just began to love and rock her. And over time, she just quit. And this beautiful, beautiful smile, we found that she had this incredible, beautiful smile. And as her healing came, the more love and more commitment she had. And then Timmy, we could not believe it. It was so weird. He was only at this point maybe 3, and he would say, my mama is a druggie, and I'm gonna be a druggie too. We were like, what? I mean, I don't even know how he even heard that. Maybe he must have heard maybe somebody in his previous foster home using those words, like maybe talking about that. We have no idea. But we turned that around and said, Oh, Timmy, you have said he loved to sing. You have such a great voice. Maybe one day you're going to be a gospel singer. Maybe this, maybe that, just speaking words of life, positivity, speaking into his life. Oh, you are so good at this. You might be this. And so we had some friends come over, and he ran up to them and he says, he's only 3. Isn't this funny? I'm going to be a gospel singer. And then we were like, wow, see their destiny, who they know, who they are, their identity changes when they come into a family who speaks life over them, who loves them, who rocks them, who holds them. Or for the older kids, who speaks destiny and says, John, I can see in you such incredible good. You are so good with your hands. You love to be on the computer. You are so great at this. I'm wondering if you might like to be an architect. You seem to be fascinated with homes as they're being built, or office complexes. Or I'm wondering if you might like one day to be a caseworker, because you are so justice oriented, and you've had some good caseworkers in your life, and you've had some bad caseworkers, and you know how to make a difference for kids who need you. And so they might, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But you're just speaking life and giving them ideas they might latch onto, what God has for them, something great where they can have input and change the world themselves. So I'm so excited to get to spend this time with you today. It's been fun sharing with you my personal journey. Guess what? We only made it to age 22. So tomorrow night, we're going to do part 2. I'm going to take you, the next children I'm going to tell you about is a teenage girl, a developmentally delayed teenage girl who came to us with STDs, couldn't even look you in the eye, heavily pregnant, and we're going to share with you her story as well as many other kids. So I can't wait to be with you tomorrow night. We're going to have a great time. I really would love to hear your feedback. It means a lot to me when I know that you are spending this time listening and learning and just spending time with me. That really does mean a lot. So love to hear from you through familylinkkids.com. I'll get that information as well, and as well as a few others in my office. Love to get your feedback. I'd love for you to check out. I want you to feel great. And if anybody in your family is in pain, I'd love for them to be out of it. Go to familylink.ciara.com, familylink.ciaura.com. Make sure when you're on our website to donate and to also join us at Caleb's Run this Saturday. So love to get your feedback. Really appreciate you guys, and we'll pick up where we left off tomorrow. Have a great night.